Hello and welcome to episode 62 of Speak Beastie for May 20th, 2018. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Speak Beastie. I'm Michael.
I'm Lizzie.
I'm Megan. And today we have an extra special guest host joining us from the Speak Beastie Common Room, Melanie.
Hello.
Yay.
Hey.
Melanie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your Hogwarts house, your Ilvermorny house, your Patronus, anything else you want us to know?
Sure.
Guess her accent, listeners. Where is she from? Guess her
I
accent.
I failed. You should guess it. We have so many like widespread intelligent listeners. Someone's going to be able to like pinpoint the city that you're in.
Oh, I'm looking forward to all the ideas, but I might already give it away very soon. So, all right. So I'm Melanie. My Hogwarts house is Hufflepuff. My Ilvermorny house is Pugwudgy. My Patronus is a dolphin.
And that's a good one.
Yeah, I was first not so excited, but I got used to it. My wand is made from rowan wood, unicorn hair core, 10¾ inches, and flexible flexibility.
That sounds like a nice wand.
Yeah, I'm very happy about it, so couldn't be better.
Yeah, Rowan's a good wand wood. I'm pretty sure that's one of the ones that's like a protector and it never goes bad.
Yes, like exactly. Yes.
Compared... And now we have a character named after it, thanks to the Hogwarts
Oh,
mystery.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I'm kind of giving it already away, but I'm originally from Germany, but I live in Finland. Since a few years. And just a fun fact, I love noodle juice. And I think that's the bee's knees. And I would even go so far as saying it's hot sauce. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you should just keep listening and wait for the time turner.
Oh. That was so good. I'm so excited now.
Look at you giving a preview.
Yeah, look at that teaser. I love it.
But what is noodle juice?
Well, you have to find out later.
Well,
we'll have to find out.
We do some time turner travel. Yes. Now, Melanie, you said that your Patronus is a dolphin and that you were disappointed by that initially. Tell us why, because I can think of many people who probably wish they had a dolphin instead of what they got.
First of all, because any sort of unofficial test that I did before, it has always turned out to be a dog or a wolf, something in that direction. Mm. And I had in my mind it would be something like that, and I was so happy about it. And the second thing was that my friend did the same test right before me, and she has a dolphin too, and I was like, this can't be right. This is so strange. And then I was just thinking, okay, this is the official Pottermore test, so I have to take this serious. And I went online and just checked up on dolphins and their meaning in certain things. And I just started to feel like, yeah, actually that fits quite nicely. It's like, yeah, it's fitting better than a dog. So I got used to it, and now I actually really like it, and I have a big stuffed dolphin on my bookshelf. It's, I fully embraced it.
I like that you did that instead of just being like, I don't like it, and taking it again, a lot of us did.
I mean, I wish we would have some kind of description, of course, but on Pottermore for it. But,
Yeah, there's a lot of things on Pottermore, especially about that Patronus test that could be better, but whatever.
Yeah. I have to fully agree with that.
Oh, well. Shall we move on to news then?
Yes.
Yeah, is that, that's probably why we're not rambling that much, because the news is a bit lacking, isn't it?
I suppose.
It's one of those weeks.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes, you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint. Just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now, for as little as $1 dragon a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com, and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees, and how.
Get ready, listeners, because Megan and I are on this episode, so right after it airs, something good's gonna come out.
Honestly, not even, it'll probably come out like 2 days before it airs, but after we've recorded it. So you guys will be like, why aren't you talking about giant thing that we just learned? And we'll be like, oh.
Keep an eye out for on Warner Brothers' YouTube, yep. On J.K. Rowling's Twitter page. Anything yep. could happen.
This is how the Beastie press cycle works. Me and Michael.
But in the meantime, I think Lizzie has the quote-unquote news, the aka the best we could do.
Yes. So, first of all, the biggest piece of news is that Speak Beastie is selling t-shirts. So, if you want to rep your favorite Fantastic Beast podcast out there in the game, you can check out our social media pages, and I'm sure you can find some links. Or you can go to customink.com/fundraising/speakbeastie to get yours. We have very exciting short sleeves and long sleeves, so you can rock Speak Beastie no matter the weather, all the seasons. And you've got at least 26 days, so until June 11th, to decide if you want to order one or not. Or if you order one, then you're like, wow, I wish I had ordered another one. Or if you were like, man, I wish I'd gotten my friend something for their birthday or some holiday coming up, then there you go. Speak Beastie t-shirts. So that's clearly the most important news.
Big holiday time, Christmas in July, all of that stuff. Big holiday time.
I think shipping for outside of the United States might be a little pricey. But it exists, so just an FYI for our international friends.
Yes, all the context is good context. In other news, apparently movie trailers have awards, which I did not know, Megan did not know, Michael knew. And Crimes of Grindelwald, the trailer for Crimes of Grindelwald was nominated for the Golden Trailer Award.
Now, hold on. Michael, are there, like, is this the only trailer award that there is? Or are there many trailer awards, and this one's, like, the Golden Globes, but then there's, like, the Oscar of Trailer Awards?
I mean, this is, I've heard of the Golden Trailer Awards before. I'm pretty sure this is the major one. There might be other minor ones out there, but this is the big one. Which is not, because, I mean, think about it. You know, when you, there's as much effort put in many ways, to the promotional pieces of a film as there are to the actual film itself. And a trailer is really, you know, it can be in many ways a make or break for a movie. And I think the Harry Potter community especially expects a lot out of its trailers. We there's a lot of buildup around our trailers. And so what they choose to show and not show is very, I think, important for our particular fandom community. So I think it's fairly deserving. That was a good trailer. That was actually quite a good trailer.
Cool. So it's like the best picture of trailers. Yeah. Well, it's nominated.
Yeah. It's not, yes, it's nominated.
I'm sorry that I interrupted you, Lizzie.
It's okay. The article on MuggleNet states that the Golden Trailer Awards honor the people who work hard to create promotional material for movies and include dozens of categories ranging from Best Viral Campaign to Best Teaser Poster. Crimes of Grindelwald has been nominated in the Best Fantasy Adventure category, competing against Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, Thor Ragnarok, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and Solo, A Star Wars Story. All very big films.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So. That's some competition. Yeah,
boy, against Last Jedi, that's rough. The Star Wars trailers are also very methodical in what they will and will not show. So I think that's probably its biggest competition right now.
Go, Newt!
And that is it! That is it for this week's news. So, if you want to find out more news or check in, always visit MuggleNet.com. The news is every day, you know. Harry Potter, Order of the Phoenix. Shall we move on to the Owl Post?
Let's do it.
I hear them now.
Here they come. More outposts than there is news.
Which, honestly, outpost is like my favorite, so that's
no,
fine
it's
with
great.
Me.
Yeah, this is what comes from the listeners, and that's the best stuff.
Mm-hmm. And how? Today's owl comes from Emily. She says, "Thanks for a fun episode. A couple of thoughts. I have a friend whose daughter is named Eulalia. It's Greek for sweetly speaking. Said friend is a speak language pathologist. Very cool. Eulalie is the French version, and it carries the same meaning. Eulalie is also the title of an Edgar Allan Poe poem. And Saint Eulalia is the patron saint of Barcelona and has a pretty interesting martyr story. Based on this, I think Eulalie will either teach, option one, a course that relies heavily on incantations due to the sweetly speaking meaning, like charms. Option two, the reference for a martyred saint might imply that she teaches defense against the dark arts. And option three, the Edgar Allan Poe poem references the stars and Eulalie turning her violent eye skyward, so perhaps astronomy. The writing trope you were referencing to when a character pops in and says something like, I'm an alchemist, I'm immortal, is informally known as, quote, as you know, Bob, unquote. It's a way to provide exposition and information that the audience needs to know because the characters already know it, but it's often considered lazy writing. Lastly, I'm hoping learning more about the Lestrange family will also teach us more about the blood status and some of the old sacred 28 families. It seems a little implausible to me that so many of these families could have truly died out completely, as we're led to believe in the HP books, like the Crouch family, Black family. I know most of the pureblood families were intermarried, but I imagine some of the individuals who were blasted off the Black family tree kept their names and went on to have families of their own, right? So let's talk about Eulalia. What do you guys think?
So this is all in response to the recent news that Jessica Williams will be playing Eulalie.
Yes.
The professor at Ilvermorny, who we don't know what class she teaches. I'm probably going to vote Defense Against the Dark Arts just because of the significance of that to the plot previously with Harry Potter.
Yes, exactly what I thought.
That's what I'm probably going with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would probably come in handy really good because if it seems like maybe she has a big role in helping Newt and the whole gang to defeat Grindelwald, to catch him. So,
unless she's more like, you know, a centaur. And so it's astronomy, and she's like, look to the stars. They have the answers, and that's all she does. And then I'll be really disappointed, because I'll be like, oh, wow, they used their second Black female character as good as they did the first one. And that'll be super disappointing.
Yeah.
So I hope she does, basically what I'm saying is I hope she doesn't teach astronomy.
I mean, I love the reasonings behind all of them, though. They're very well thought out.
Yeah, they're all good points. Yes.
I think Defense Against the Dark Arts could be cool, especially during that time period.
Where there wasn't much darkness. Well, they're starting to be.
They're starting to be like, oh, wow, we have this guy we need to fight. Let's call this dweeby child to help us. And then, you know, maybe the Defense Against the Dark Arts dark arts teacher could get involved in some way. That might be fun.
Did you just call Newt a dweeby child?
Yes. I mean, lovingly. I called him that lovingly.
Oh, maybe she's the one that teaches them that awesome spell that him and Theseus are doing in the second movie.
But isn't she just mentioned or showing up very shortly?
That's the only reason she shows up in movie number two. She's just like, he has this spell. Bye.
That's see you in the next movie. I teach you another.
Yes, come back in another movie and I'll have even better spells for you. It's interesting. So, because since we're only getting a sneak peek of her, too, does that mean her sneak peek? Are we getting a sneak peek of her at Ilvermorny in the current time period? Are we getting a sneak peek of her in a flashback? Or are we getting a sneak peek of her somewhere else outside of Ilvermorny?
Well, since we are going to be mainly in France, I would guess it's maybe some sort of flashback, maybe? Or there is going to be an owl sent by Dumbledore or someone. And we just see her in a very short moment where she receives the note that, hey, we need your help or something similar.
Yeah, let's go with that. She's going to be like the after credits scene in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, like at the very end, one short glimpse at her.
I hope she's really important. That's all I want, is for her to be really
important. Yeah, I'm actually really excited about her. So
yeah.
Why would they tease it like that and have a picture of her with J.K. Rowling if she wasn't going to be important? Like, I wouldn't put it past them. I'm just saying that would be really
well, it was. It was said that she's going to be having a more important role in the third movie, right?
The credits come up. That's true. Eulalia will return in Fantastic Beasts 3.
I'm down for her to have her own series. This is just like, see, what'll happen is it'll be just like how they've already said that Lando Calrissian's getting his own spinoff, because that's like the only thing that the critics like about the Han Solo movie is Donald Glover. So they were like, fine, sure, we'll give him his own series. So we'll all love Eulalia so much that we'll just give her her own movie.
There we go.
I'm down. I'd watch it. I don't even know who she is. I don't care. She's Jessica Williams. That's all that matters.
So true.
But so this was the writing trope thing in reference to that clip that we haven't seen, the secret clip where Jacob meets Nicholas Flamel. Yeah.
And he goes, I'm an alchemist. I'm immortal.
Just like that, in his old age, he just jumps up and waves his jazz hands around. I'm an alchemist! I'm immortal!
Clicks his heels together and all that.
Yeah, I like that it was pointed out by Emily that she was just like, that's lazy writing.
Yeah. I'm reading another article that Jacob's response is, you don't look a day over 375.
Oh, he quips.
God. Maybe they'll cut it. Like they cut the I want to be a wizard thing.
That's fine. That's a quip I'm okay losing. You know, it was funny. The reason that I was like right on the dot for this call, I saw Megan's message where she was like, Michael, join the call. But I was busy. I was ever so busy watching the Honest trailer for Black Panther. And funnily enough, it ties in because they point out in the Honest trailer that what makes T'Challa so great is that he's basically the first Marvel hero who doesn't quip. And they used a bunch of clips where he's tempted by this script to make a quip and he doesn't.
Huh.
And I realized after watching that I was like, yep, that's like a problem with like all fandom movies right now.
Yeah.
Is they're really into quips because quips are a quick, easy, cheap way to get a laugh. And almost, in a way, they're marketable, because if you get a really good quip, you can put it on a shirt.
Did you see Infinity War?
Sure did. Sure did. Yes, I did. Funny you should ask.
Speaking of quips, I mean.
So, I
feel
like... Quip
war is what it should be.
Yep.
I mean, I loved it, watched. Don't get me wrong, but there were
some quipping.
Yeah.
Yes. So maybe yeah, if they were to cut Jacob's you know, quip from that, I wouldn't probably miss it. It's funny because I was just talking to Leandra about this, and I've been talking to my Harry Potter club at the library about this a bit too. My teens who are in Harry Potter club, we were talking about Fantastic Beasts in our last meeting, and one of them very like shyly, he clearly was reluctant to say it because he thought we would like murder him on the spot, is he just said, "I didn't really like Fantastic Beasts."
What?
I was like, it's like, that's okay. And he was just like, really? And I was like, yeah, no. So you don't have to like it.
No, of course it's not.
Melanie, you're not invited to our meetings.
I mean, around here, you're fired. But if you're just a regular person, then no, you don't have to like it.
I just got fired? Really? Yay!
But it's like, I think there's something to be said about, we've all noticed too before and talked about how Rowling's writing in the films seems a little different, not quite sometimes always up to par, and likely in many ways is the consequence of having many people look over it, retool it, you know, touch it up for what they believe is the best way to approach film treatment. Because Rowling, first and foremost, does not write for film. And there was a time a long time ago when she was just like, nope, never going to do that because I don't know how. Because they asked her for Harry Potter and she said no, because she didn't feel comfortable doing that. Mm. Fantastic Beasts is definitely a perfectly serviceable movie. But there are times when the writing is, you know, maybe not up to par with, say, what she might have written if she had done it as a book.
I'm an alchemist.
I'm immortal, Jazz Hands.
By the way, this thing is called magic, and you see how it works is.
Well, and we have, you know, the obvious issue in the same way, somewhat similar to the issue that Cursed Child has, that you have some people who are going into this who are unfamiliar with the nuances of the Potter story, so you have to do quote-unquote lazy writing or as you know Bob lines like this, because people meet Nicholas Flamel and if they don't know Harry Potter well, they go, who's that? Because that's from Sorcerer's Stone and he's never on screen. He's not really, he's a MacGuffin to the plot. He's not actually important. So that for a Potter audience who maybe doesn't know it as well, they're not going to know that right away.
Nicholas Flamel is the only known maker of the Sorcerer's Stone.
The what? What?
Honestly, don't you two read?
Anyway. Or they could just replay that scene.
Yeah, they just splice it on in there. I'm not even sure that was the right line. I haven't watched that movie in a while.
No, it was. That was perfectly quoted.
Oh, yay. Good. Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Side note. Do you think that they're going to film two separate scenes and call it Philosophers and Sorcerers if they mention it?
Oh.
Twist.
I feel like they have to at this point. They're stuck.
Yep. Their hands are tied.
They dug that hole a long time ago.
Anyway, that's the
long way of saying that. What were we talking about?
Yes, Emily, that is lazy writing. Well spotted.
And also the rest of your comment was very like substantive and excellent, and we just went off on a tangent, so it's fine.
No, it's good, it's good. The Lestranges.
Yes.
And
the very last bit about the old sacred 28 families we're going to get to in main discussion.
Yes, so. They definitely, I'm pretty sure they talked about this last episode as well.
Probably.
But it ties into what I would like to talk about today is, so.
Can't stop, also, won't stop.
Right, because it's
that's
fun.
Fine, because I think all the owls flew away while we were talking about. I'm an alchemist. I'm a mortal.
They were like, "Let's get out of here. This is ridiculous."
See, now I'm going for a cheap laugh like Marvel, because I know every time I say that, you guys are going to laugh.
Nothing wrong with that.
Am I any better than a Marvel movie? I'm no better than a Marvel movie.
Next main
but
discussion.
But they make billions of dollars. So
is Michael better than a Marvel film?
Oh, God. People are actually going to answer that question in the comments. I look forward to your responses.
I want like an in-depth 5-paragraph essay about it, though.
Please don't at me on Twitter.
So thanks again, Emily, for sending in your owl for this week. We love getting everyone's thoughts, so always drop us a line online, Twitter, through our Gmail, and all that other good fun stuff.
Yeah, Emily, yay. That was better than the news.
Yeah, really. Guys.
What?
This is what we really haven't talked about, like, super in depth. We haven't just come out and, like, had a whole conversation about it. The fact
this
that
is what you this is what you interrupted my viewing of the Black Panther Honest trailer for.
Yes. You've known it for months, but I would like to announce it again. Credence is back.
No.
Yes.
What?
He's back. And we were just like, oh, that's cool. And then we moved on with our lives. But I think we should talk about it.
That's good. That's a worthwhile note, because even the movie doesn't, the trailer didn't really make a big deal about
well,
that.
Yeah, and actually we found out from that sad little moving picture that we thought was going to be a trailer, but wasn't. And it was just kind of like BT-dubs, Credence is back. Like, that's how the whole franchise has been treating this. And, like, I know that it was a big theory after the first film, but to have it confirmed is really exciting for me, because I think he's one of the most dynamic characters that the film has offered us, and I think we should talk about kind of what we know so far, and that's going to involve some of what was touched on last episode, I mean.
Let's do it to it.
Yes. I would also like to give a shout out to Marjolaine. I probably butchered your name the 14th time in my life.
Oh, Marjolaine?
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Marjolaine?
I probably said it wrong, too. She hates when I do my French accent. As she should.
I said it once and she was like, that was close. So every time I just alter it like a little bit to try to get closer, but I'm probably altering it further away from what it actually is. But she's amazing and she gave me the suggestion in the common room. So
yeah, she's like our official French correspondent for
yes,
Fantastic
it's true.
Beasts. Yeah.
Yeah, the things yeah. she knows is amazing, really.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. She seems to go well out of her way to get us some really in-depth information on France. She's really taking this second movie being in Paris very seriously.
Which is
very
great.
Impressive.
Yes.
If you listeners aren't in the Speak Beastie Common Room, it's worth the Patreon donation, because the stuff she's teaching us about France in the 1920s through to now is fascinating.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Don't come for us, come for Marjolaine.
Definitely. So Credence, we know two really big things about him at this point. One, he's back. Two, he's a Lestrange.
Dun, dun, dun!
And it looks from the trailer like he's Leta Lestrange's half-brother. It also looks from the trailer like his birth name was Corvus Lestrange. Which isn't a whole lot better than Credence Barebone, poor guy.
I do like Credence better, though. Or is it just because we are so used to it now?
Maybe.
It's because you're used to it. It would be, well, it's hard to give a character a name change. It's like when, you know, Rapunzel starts calling Flynn Eugene, a little tangled. Just like, oh, I guess we're sticking with that, huh? Yep, okay.
Flynn was better, but sure.
But sure.
And so we don't know a whole lot about the Lestrange family tree at this point in time. As they talked about last time, the Lestrange family is on the list of the Sacred 28, who, according to Pottermore, is a list of 28 families that in the 1930s or 40s, which I think kind of lines up with our Fantastic Beasts timeline. An anonymous publication concerned with preserving the purity of bloodlines within the magical population was compiled, giving a compendium of the truly pure blood families. So the Lestranges were on there, and so are all of the other names that we have heard of. There was not a name on here that I was like, oh, that's new. Like, it's all Potter names. And none of them are all that surprising, to be honest. Should I list them, or is that boring?
I'm not bored.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so we got Abbott, we got Avery, Black, Bulstrode, Burke, Caro, Crouch, Folly. Actually, that's the one where it says no members of this pureblood family are mentioned in the Harry Potter stories. So that's fun.
So that's the one. That's the one name we have room to speculate about.
Flint, Gaunt, Greengrass, Lestrange, Longbottom, Macmillan, Malfoy, Knott, Ollivander, Parkinson, Pruitt, Rosier, Rowell, Selwyn, Shacklebolt, Shafik. This is also no appearances were made by the Shafik family in the Potter stories. Mm. So I completely lied. There's two. Slughorn, Travers, Weasley, and Yaxley. And then there's a little blurb that says, why didn't the Potters make it? And that says, Potter is a common Muggle surname. Harry's family didn't make the list, according to J.K. Rowling, because the anonymous compiler of that supposedly definitive list of purebloods suspected that they had sprung from what he considered to be tainted blood. Okay, so the anonymous compiler is a he, and he's just speculating? He doesn't have any proof as to whether families are pureblood?
There was actually written somewhere that his name might be Cantankerous Knot.
Ah. Yep.
But okay. They were family. Not sure about it, but
Cantankerous.
They're suspecting it was him.
Gotcha. With this list coming out around the time of some of the Fantastic Beasts films, given that it's the 1930s or 40s, and the fact that the Lestranges are on it, that could play a role in the story that we'll have with Credence and with Leta, I suppose. Any other thoughts about the Sacred 28? It just is what it is.
So the Sacred 28 was revealed in the Pure Blood writing piece by Rowling. And down after she does the list, it says, a minority of these families publicly deplored their inclusion on the list, declaring that their ancestors certainly included Muggles, a fact of which they were not ashamed. Most vocally indignant was the numerous Weasley family, which in spite of its connections with almost every old wizarding family in Britain, was proud of its ancestral ties to many interesting Muggles. Their protests earned these families the opprobrium of advocates of the pureblood doctrine and the epithet blood traitor. Meanwhile, a larger number of families were protesting that they were not on the pureblood list. It also says over subsequent decades and centuries, the number of mixed marriages began to climb again until the healthy levels of today. And this has not led to widespread discovery of the hidden magical community. Professor Mordecai's Egg, author of The Philosophy of the Mundane, Why the Muggles Prefer Not to Know, points out that the
that sounds
Muggles
like a problematic
love,
book.
Points out that Muggles in love generally do not betray their husbands or wives, and Muggles who fall out of love are jeered at by their own community when they assert that their strange partner is a witch or wizard. That's
Mordecai's
great.
Egg.
Hmm. So. Well, I think maybe as far as Credence is. Stuff and tying that into the Sacred 28 with that is mostly just kind of the fun of putting him in this story somewhere.
Yeah.
Or tying him more back to the Potter's story, which is what constantly frustrates me about Fantastic Beasts.
So
that it's kind of that thing. Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, go ahead.
It's kind of that thing that happened. This happens a lot with fandom series, and a big one that it kind of happened with was Star Wars, where everybody was like, Rey has to mean something or else I don't want to watch these movies. And then the second movie was literally like, nope, screw you, Rey means nothing, she's just a girl, she's a great girl, an awesome girl, but she's just a girl. And everybody was like, boo! But anybody who, you know, watched it and had a modicum of sense was like, yay! Because it's kind of refreshing to not have to tie everything back into everything. Because what's the surprise, really? What's the surprise? Like, oh, her real name is Rey Skywalker Solo Chewbacca. Like,
Chewbacca's
her
dad. That's
what we wanted. Is that really what you wanted? No, you don't want that. You're not shocked by that, are you? You're not even shocked by the Chewbacca part, be honest. But yeah, I don't know. I like the thing with Credence works a little better just because there was ostensibly no ties to any of the earlier stuff with the first Fantastic Beasts. Like, they weren't even trying to do that.
Yeah.
So, and she left it open that Credence could be, you know, as significant or insignificant as you want him to be.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he was mostly used to establish the whole Obscurial situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like that, because that ended up revealing something about Ariana, but in a way where it wasn't like he was, you know, a distant Dumbledore relative, and the Obscurial runs in the Dumbledore line. Like, no, at least they didn't do something like that. So that's a step in the right direction, I guess.
So my next question is, do you think that Dumbledore will have a special connection with Credence because of Ariana?
No!
Literally, it's on the sheet.
Somebody else answer. I need a drink.
Well, he'd be like, oh crap, this kid's an Obscurial. That happened to me already. I need to do the thing.
And what's the thing?
I'm not sure.
I would hope. Should the two meet, which I, you know, believe they will, and should Dumbledore put it together, which I hope he will, because he's not that dumb. He's pretty smart. He's a fairly intelligent man. That once he realized...
More like Smartledore.
That
Ashley, that's the episode title. Okay, great.
I hope that Dumbledore will do like the right thing, which is also the nice thing, and like genuinely like try to help, or at least help him realize that there's a way to, like, if he has a way to control himself and not do the Harry Potter thing where he exploits it for a little bit until the right moment, or like keeps the information a little bit of a secret until like the very end, where he's like, this is all within you, it's all inside you the whole time. I hope he does the right thing, which is hopefully also the nice thing this time.
So we hope that he's not gonna use Credence as bait to get to Grindelwald.
Yeah, let's hope he doesn't do exactly what Graves did. Grindelwald, whatever that person. The two of them. The one of them.
So that kind of brings up additional questions. Like, after the events in New York, like, is he still an Obscurial? Did that part of him, like, get killed? Like, I don't know. What do you guys think is going on with that? Is that still a part of him? And if so, like, you know, obviously people are going to try to use it for their own personal reasons.
I was a while ago already wondering that, since he was basically exploding and there was only this tiny wisp escaping, is Credence himself like really weakened, and his body has been taken over, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, that he might not have all control anymore, but the Obscurus has, because we don't know much about what an Obscurus is capable of, especially one that has been alive for so long in a body and grows stronger all the time, as it seems. So
that is an interesting point.
I don't think an Obscurial is like a Horcrux. Well, actually, wait, hold on. Retract. Rewind. I think an Obscurial is like a Horcrux, where, like, you have to do something to get rid of it, maybe? Because no one, like, made him explode. Credence made himself explode, right? Am I right? Am I wrong?
Well, they were shooting a bunch of spells at him.
Yeah, there was a lot of spells hitting him, so wasn't that making him explode?
That's what I thought.
It could be.
No, exactly what the spells were either. Like, nobody made an incantation.
No, so it wasn't actually set which which spells it were.
Yeah.
I feel like there's probably, like, something very specific to, like, remove the Obscurial from the host and then actually, like... Newt literally did that.
Yes, exactly. Newt actually found a way to do it, but with the girl that he did it on, it was already too late. She died during it. So I could actually think that maybe that's why they try to find him also, to try it again and be be successful this time, hopefully, if he has help from Dumbledore in that.
And that would make sense as to why Dumbledore says specifically that he needs Newt's help.
Maybe that's where also Flamel comes in.
Yeah.
That he plays part in keeping him alive.
I started talking about some nonsense and it actually led somewhere, so I'm really impressed right now.
We're on a roll.
Maybe. I wonder if Credence is really a big part of why everybody ends up converging on Paris. If they somehow find out that he's there based on reports that indicate that he's there. Because they seem to have eyes and ears everywhere, and Credence was making quite a mess of New York. And if there's some activity that's going on that seems linked to him somehow, that might be why. Because it's interesting you guys were saying how he may not, how Dumbledore wouldn't, you hope he doesn't use Credence that way, but I think he will, but he'll do it by accident, because Dumbledore is still, this is the thing that we've heard from Yates and Rowling so far, is that Dumbledore is in a very conflicted state at this point in his life. He's not quite the wizened person we know in Harry Potter, but he's not as naive as he was in his younger years. He's somewhere kind of in between that. Mm-hmm. And if he knew what happened with Ariana, I think he has a bit of a very emotional state about an Obscurus and Obscurial. I think that would make him very emotional and want to reach out to assist. But he is also in the midst of this war with Grindelwald, and he's being pressured by the public to do something, and he can't bring himself to do anything. And so I imagine there's still, and we know even by the time Harry Potter rolls around, he's still somewhat a practitioner of the greater good concept. Like, he hasn't completely abandoned that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine Dumbledore perhaps in some way fooling himself into believing that he's helping Credence by also utilizing him in this conflict.
Yeah.
He might be approaching Credence in the same exact way that Grindelwald did, but with a gentle hand.
Yeah, so that's kind of the other thing, too. Like, if Credence becomes this central to the story, like, what is it about him that people find so important, I guess? Like, obviously...
He's an Obscurial that lived.
But, like, if you're trying to kill the Obscurus, then... why are you trying to save Credence?
Can you actually kill the Obscurus? Because the one that Newt took out from the girl, he still had it in the bubble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that still considered to be alive?
Stick it in the bubble with the other one?
He's kind of talked about that the Obscurus itself is just like a parasite, and it's almost not really like a fully living proper creature, so it's like completely benign when it's separated from a host. It just is.
So, not to drift off too far from the original topic now, but if, let's say, we saw that in the first movie, Grindelwald Graves had basically the separated Obscurus there, right there with him, showing it to Newt that he has it. Did he keep it somehow? Because he was asking, how could he use it? Would he maybe start trying to put it into himself or someone else again and cause some more destruction?
I think that's along the right lines, because I think Grindelwald's at least smart enough to not immediately just attach himself to the thing that looks like it's made of evil.
Yes. So that he would try it.
Literally just a cloud of evil.
That's basically what he was doing in that meeting with Newt, right? Was just being like, can I touch it or should I not touch it?
Yeah.
And Newt's like, don't touch it. And he's like, okay, I'm going to make somebody else touch it. So Grindelwald strikes me as somebody who would first probably have others do his bidding for him before he were to step in with that. I mean, we kind of know that from his Durmstrang days. We know that he was performing experiments on students.
Oh, yeah, true.
So he's not above making people his lab rats. Credence is kind of convenient because he doesn't even have to do the combo part. They're already fused together.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, if he wants just the Obscurus to keep to put with somebody else who he thinks is, because he clearly doesn't think initially for a long time he didn't even think that much of Credence. He thought he was a squib.
Mm-hmm.
So
right,
I don't know, but his opinion on Credence turned when he had the Obscurial with it, or when he realized he was an Obscurial. But I don't know if that's because he wants just the Obscurus or because he actually thinks that Credence is capable of doing what he needs him to do, whatever that is. Punch people into submission? I don't know.
Maybe that's where this whole thing that Dumbledore always says to Harry, it's our choices more than our abilities, kind of comes from, is watching Credence struggle with this like dark force that he has inside of him. And like, he's obviously going to have to struggle with that and be like, okay, do I give in to this or do I? It's like a much higher stakes version of what Harry's dealing with in Order of the Phoenix, kind of.
Mm-hmm. I think there's even just there's a potential for this to be like, Harry Potter is very nuanced and obviously very, you know, morally gray when it comes to how the choices that the characters make. And I think there's an opportunity to go even deeper with that if Rowling wants with these characters, since they're adults, but like young adults, and are still, many of them in a phase of their life where they're still learning how to make good choices. And she's even kind of hinted that that's a struggle that Dumbledore is having even in middle age, is how to still make the right choices. So yeah, I think there's some really interesting paths these characters could take with this. I'm kind of interested to see if they don't necessarily, some of them don't fail horribly in some of their kind of attempts to, because Credence seems, like, to me, at least through the first movie, Credence seemed like a ticking time bomb kind of a character. Like, he was just waiting to fully just go crazy, and he basically did at the end, and Tina was the only one who was able to even start the kind of healing process, and she got cut short with that. So, thanks to Serafina. Come on, girl.
Come on. I don't even
know what you were doing.
She's gonna make up for you.
She better.
Where have you been this whole time?
Making stupid decisions. Being manipulated by Grindelgrave.
Did we hear that she's, because I know she's briefly in the movie, and the Lego set implied that she briefly fights with Grindelwald, possibly during his escape. Did we also hear maybe that she actually goes to Paris at some point in the movie, or does she stay in New York?
That I don't know.
Because in the Lego set, she's dressed like a Beauxbatons student.
So how often do the Lego sets reflect, like, film or book canon? Like, they don't stray from that, do they?
They tend not to stray. They have little extra features that are just there to add entertainment. But generally, yeah, like, the set itself will reflect a moment in the, like, there's a Chamber of Secrets set with Aragog where it's pretty much like, you know, the spider lair and Aragog and Harry and Ron, but there's like a little pull out chest that has gold coins in it, and it's like, look at the secret treasure, and I'm like, that's not That's not a part of the story. Aragog doesn't hoard treasure like a dragon.
He's an Acromantula / Niffler. He's got a Niffler as like a grandfather or something. I'm mostly a terrifying spider, but I do have this stash of gold coins over here that I just can't resist.
The Lego sets always have a second element of play because they try to encourage kids to make up their own stories with the sets.
Mm-hmm.
So they always add in special parts that aren't necessarily canon. But from the look of the general set, I don't know what the secondary stuff is in the Thestral set. It might be too small to have secondary stuff like that. But it appears that there is some legitimacy to Serafina and Grindelwald having a confrontation of some kind, or else they probably wouldn't have included her in the set.
Okay. I'm up for that.
Which would be nice because we can actually see her, you know, use her wand.
What a concept.
What a concept. Sorry, Credence. I just really want to talk about Serafina all the time. I'm sorry. This all ties back to you, buddy.
It does.
I'm sure they're all going to Paris. I just wanted to know if Serafina was going to Paris to look for Credence because she felt really bad for blowing him up.
Obviously. Hey, listen, bro, I just really want to apologize for that whole thing.
Or maybe Serafina knows that Credence is... maybe Serafina realized or rethought about her views on Credence and maybe thinks that he would be an asset and that they maybe shouldn't have blown him up and put him right in Grindelwald's hands.
IDK. I thought that was a pretty solid plan myself.
So you think that so far only Newt knows that he still sort of is alive? No one else saw this little wisp going away?
That is another thing. Like, so, how does he get back to being a man?
Thanks for bringing Newt back into this conversation. He has nothing to do with this so far.
So is he sending out owls? Hey, he's still alive.
Mm.
Come all to France, because for some reason he went there to find out where his roots are, because he's a Lestrange and they seem to be French.
Hmm.
I guess he would know if he knew Leta. Maybe he got curious about that stuff.
But, like, how do you think he manages? Are they going to tell us? Because the last time we saw him, he was literally a wisp of cloud. And now he's a fully formed guy again.
Maybe now we're going to start with him going to the boat. You know, the deleted scene that was...
Oh, where he gets on the boat.
Yeah, that was promised to be an extra on the DVD, but it wasn't. So maybe we're going to see it now. In the beginning of the next movie.
Oh, there you go. Hey, David Yates, don't make promises you can't keep.
Do we even know if he went to England or did he go on a boat that went to France and he by chance found out he comes from there? I don't know, but we don't know which boat he took, do we?
No, I don't think so, because the implication from that deleted scene was supposed to leave a cliffhanger that did Credence follow Newt, or did he, like, because I guess the angle that they shot it at, you could question whether Credence got on the same boat as Newt did or not. And if Credence ended up in Paris, I mean, he maybe went to the UK with Newt, because Newt went straight back to the UK because his book was ready. And we know that because by the time we pick up in the next movie, it's been published. So Credence could have gone with him to the UK and then wandered off to France, or he could have gotten on a boat that went straight to France and was like, oops, my evil plan didn't work. I'm in France. Guess I'll join the circus.
It would make sense that he took a boat that went straight to France, because he is going to join the circus as far as we know. And that one is currently in France, right?
Yeah, the circus stuff is taking place in France. The ones that we've seen in the trailer.
Maybe he went on the boat where the circus went to France with and joins them already there.
Yes, the circus was in the US.
Yes.
There you go. That's it. That's it. So he just joined the circus right on the boat.
The circus gets around.
Well, and Megan, you also asked whether we think, how we think Credence's relationship is now with the Obscurus, and the trailer so far seems to have implied that he has gained some control over the Obscurus with the way that he seems to be purposefully sending it somewhere in that scene on the rooftop. True. So, which makes him an even bigger asset if he can actually control its use. I wonder what he's doing with it if he's sending it places.
Right.
Because an Obscurus doesn't seem to have much use other than to, you know, destroy buildings and suffocate people.
Break the Eiffel Tower in half. That's what I want to see.
Yep.
Destroying all of a sudden,
landmark always makes for a good movie.
Yep, it turns into like an apocalypse movie.
Fantastic Beasts Independence Day.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Welcome to Paris, pun.
Tidal wave knocks over.
Yep, that's what the audience wants. Yeah. These producers are so on it these days. They get us.
Who has other thoughts or feelings about Credence? I feel like we're in that weird speculative area right now while we wait for more information, but...
It's all we have.
And there's a lot of possibilities, so it's, I don't know, I think it's fun.
Wasn't there also the other scene we had with him was where he was breaking those little dragons out of a cage?
Oh.
What's going on there?
What's that about?
Very angry.
Yeah, he looked mad.
Yeah. And he uses a wand.
Next time I disagree with a coworker, I'm going to be like, I will be right back with my tiny dragons. We are going to kick your butt.
And then they'll think you're making a Game of Thrones reference.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I don't want
Mother of Dragons, here she comes. Mother of Tiny Dragons.
Specifically Tiny Dragons.
Yes, only tiny ones. I don't know. Well, and the only other piece we get with if his name is his true birth name is in fact Corvus is, like all of the Black family and their relations, Corvus is a constellation.
Hmm.
It's the raven or the crow.
Huh.
I don't know if that tells us anything more than we know, or if it kind of really just fits with the Obscurus imagery.
Yeah, it says Corvus is the genus containing crows.
Because he flies around New York City.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out.
Black.
Well, aren't crows related to... you know, they're always depicted as something death-like, a death omen, something dark and bad.
Mm-hmm.
But they're actually really smart and underestimated all the time. So that would kind of fit to him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still holding to Credence being easily swayed to either side at this moment because both sides have treated him badly. And that he will likely sway towards Grindelwald initially, but sway back to Dumbledore near the end, because we still have 4 movies to go. And if they want to give him a proper arc, he can't just go to one side and stick to it, because that's not interesting. Because he is the most in-between character out of everybody.
So do you think he is going to survive all the movies through?
I think he'll survive till the last one. I think he will die in the last one.
Well, now I can prepare myself.
Yeah.
Start now.
So in a couple of years, let's come back to this moment and see if we were right.
I mean, yeah.
Set your alarm for 10 years from now.
What are we placing bets on? Who thinks he's going to live and who thinks he's going to die?
I am pretty sure he's going to die. I'm not sure when.
I think Ezra Miller is hoping he lives.
I think somebody's got to make a noble sacrifice because it's Harry Potter. And really, I'm surprised more people aren't making noble sacrifices in this series. Usually that's a lot of characters.
Besides, we're talking about a piece of work from Rowling, and she is just killing a lot of people. So especially those that you
killing people.
Especially those that you grew attached to. And I think we all really like Credence. So he is gonna die.
She didn't kill any of the Golden Trio though.
But she wanted
that
to,
I feel,
didn't
is
she?
Something people don't give her enough credit for that. Because everybody thought it was there's no way all 3 of them were gonna survive, and then they did ish.
Well,
Melanie's right. She almost killed
Ron.
Yes,
she wanted to kill Ron, but then she didn't.
Well, somebody very smart was like, hey, listen, no, don't do that.
Need a little bit of happiness.
Yeah.
Well, hey, she didn't kill the trio. Now she has a quartet, so...
So uh-oh. Who thinks nope. that
no
that Jacob is dying?
No, I can't.
No, we can't handle
I
this.
I quit.
So yeah, no, I think out of everybody, Credence is set up to die.
Yeah, poor thing.
His sacrifice will be Dobby-esque. It will be very noble.
Yeah.
And he will finally realize his place within the wizarding world and his place within this conflict. I think that will definitely come to pass.
Oh, that's going to be so a character
that lives a sad life and then dies. So.
Yeah, I mean, that happens to a lot of characters in Harry Potter. Basically, Sirius's life. Sirius and Lupin didn't have such great days.
No.
And then they died. So. Oh, yep. Wow, that hit all three of you at the exact same time.
Good shot, Michael.
All three of your names just like flashed on my Skype just at the exact same time. Oh. It's just, especially too, because we have a series as well where we know some individuals who are going to survive. Like quite a few individuals who are going to make it through.
Right.
This
Newton
series.
Tina. At least a couple.
We don't know if Queenie makes it through, right?
We do not know about Queenie.
Imagine the riots.
Everybody will be fine. Let's move on.
Oh, Credence.
All right. Well, shall we?
Yes, let's close the lid on the Credence feels for today.
Okay.
Tuck that back in the hole where it belongs and bring it out another day.
All right. Well, since we've tucked that away, before I turn this time turner, ladies, does everybody have their best 1920s outfit on? You got your flapper hair. You got your dress your long dress that just that shows off your knees.
Yeah, I got my shins out for this.
Same. It's almost all right. It's almost 3 a.m. here, so no.
Holy crap.
Wow. Okay, well, you go run and get those, Melanie. Okay. And then
we'll wait.
I'll put on my top hat and tails. Yeah, we'll wait. Yep, we'll wait for you two listeners, because we're in a time turn. We're going to time turn all the way back to the 1920s. It takes a lot of turns on that time turner. And we are going to spend a little time just hanging out in some 20s culture, specifically learning a little bit of 1920s slang, because too fun, am I right? But a little bit of the reason why, because really when I was looking back on these articles, when I was doing my research on some 1920s slang, I was just kind of amazed at how much slang there was in the 1920s. Granted, it's harder to kind of spot these things when you live in that era. So, for instance, there are probably a lot of things we say today that will become outdated pretty quickly. Like, working with teens, I know that things come and go very quickly as far as what you'd say in don't say. By the way, listeners, the golden rule, according to some research I have done, is that once BuzzFeed uses the phrase, it's not cool anymore. Be careful. Teens will stop using something once BuzzFeed does it because they feel like they're being pandered to by BuzzFeed.
Well, good for teens.
Adults. Yeah, right? So they run to make their own language rather than follow the trends. But in the 1920s, actually, a lot of major shifts were happening because World War I had wrapped around this time that we're looking at. And we are going into the era of The Great Gatsby. And why I say that is because that was an unusual book for its time, because F. Scott Fitzgerald wasn't writing about it really the past. He was writing about the time he was living in, which is possibly why The Great Gatsby didn't do very well financially until far after Fitzgerald had died. But Fitzgerald's work is a great example of the cultural shift in the 20s. Coming out of a war, and this also happened in the 50s, people suddenly were like, yay, the war's over, let's drink and be merry. And then the government was like, no drinking. And they were like, okay, well, let's drink secretly and be merry. So the way they got around, so that ended up actually initiating a lot of use for slang, because people were getting pretty merry in the 20s to the point that they needed to hide things from the law. And so, like, drinking. And so a lot of the slang that comes from the 20s is actually meant to be code to use around law enforcement, or if you are unknown, if you're maybe in the presence of law enforcement and you're being careful and you don't know if they're there or not. But that's where a lot of that comes from, in addition to this just excess of decadence in the 1920s and a feeling of rebelliousness on the part of young adults to break away from this post-Victorian era of the, you know, for women, the long dresses and the formalities, to what was the flapper style, which was kind of, which was associated with jazz, which was considered sinful, the music of the devil. Because people in the 20s were a little dumb too, I guess.
So much gyrating.
Yeah, can you imagine how they'd feel today? They would just drop dead.
Yeah. Sorry.
And if they were around today, they'd be like, I'm an alchemist, I'm immortal.
That is true.
That's true.
But
hey, you're 150. Do you happen to be an alchemist?
and immortal? The other big thing that went along with this decadence, excess of decadence, was what showed up in the 1920s? The car. And there were a lot of fun things to say about this brand new invention. Like, beep, step beep. On it. There were quite a few things that have survived from the 1920s until now, actually. I found a great article from OxfordDictionaries.com that mentioned, that gave us a list of a few words from that were invented in the 20s or phrases that actually stayed till today. When you say somebody is an it girl, which people still actually say sometimes today, it being used to describe sex appeal came out of the 1920s, actually, around 1927, Newt's era. Let's see, what are some of the other fun ones here? Freebie was a 1920s saying. The abominable snowman came out of the 1920s out of a mistranslation from Tibet. I'm sure Ariel would appreciate that one. The poor man to sexpert came out of the 1920s, an expert on sex.
Really?
When going through this list, there are several that now, knowing all this that you explained now, it actually makes sense, because some of these are just hilariously weird, like banana oil. How would you ever know that banana oil means I doubt that?
yep. When you look at the historical context of why people said some of these things, you kind of see why this would, because out of the blue these things sound very weird. And it's kind of funny, again, some of the things that stayed. One of the other things that stayed around from the 1920s, you probably don't hear it too often, but a hot diggity dog was a 1920s.
I say that at least once a day.
Well, I prefer hot socks now, so.
Yeah, Melanie, tell us some of your favorites that you found in this list, because I can tell you did some research.
I was going through this list because as soon as I saw we were going to talk about this, it just sounded so much fun. If you want to know what I said in the beginning, actually, when I said I love noodle juice means tea.
Ooh, I love noodle juice too.
See, at first I just thought that was a Norway thing. I mean, a Finnish thing. Gosh.
Maybe
I don't know what they do in Norway, but here in Finland, we don't call it noodle juice. No.
Yeah, no, my geography was not strong at that moment.
Nitzkmander.
I was like, maybe she means
Newt's
broth.
Commander loves
maybe she just really likes broth.
Scandinavia.
No, and bee's knees. Terrific. Or elephant eyebrows. Eel's hips. It all means terrific. That is just, I love these so much. I think that I'm going to use them all week and my boyfriend is going to go nuts.
That's what boyfriends are for, driving them nuts.
And hot socks means great as well.
Yeah, they had a lot of words to say great.
Yeah, I still don't understand why you would call a female tomato, or you call a toilet John.
That still happens sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, people use it jokingly, but if you say, like, I need to use the John.
Huh.
Like, that, people know what that means.
Well, I learned something.
It's not very common anymore.
No, it's an outdated term, but yeah, and like Megan said, it's kind of used for humor. But people know what that means if you say it here.
It's normally, there's a company that does like portable toilets that uses Port-a-John. So that's like a thing.
Okay.
Kale means money.
Wouldn't that be nice if that's what we were talking about when we talked about kale?
Ah, yes, I will have a kale salad, meaning just a salad of money. Thank you.
Yeah, money was
I will also have a kale smoothie.
There were a lot of ways to talk about money, and quite a few of them had to do with food. You could also call a dollar a clam or a cabbage.
Oh my gosh, salads are going to be so lucrative. I will have a kale and cabbage salad.
One Harry Potter related thing I found is a Charlie. Can you guess what that is without looking it up?
A dragon.
Guess first.
What was it? Say it again.
A Charlie. Like Charlie. The name Charlie.
Look at that.
Does it have to do with
look at
the
that
dance?
Charlie over there. Was that vague enough? But also, I'll order the Charlie.
Okay.
Oh, Melanie's like, no, don't do that.
A Charlie means a man with a mustache.
Oh, I will order a Charlie.
Oh, like Charlie Chaplin.
To go.
So the question is now, did Charlie Weasley have a mustache?
My brother's named Charlie, and he does not have a mustache. By that standard, I'd be a Charlie.
You have a mustache.
I'm a Charlie. By the way, you have to say all of these with 20s accents because they just
You're
sound
the only
better.
One that can do a 20s accent.
Yes. I bet you all could do it if you tried.
Me with my Finnish.
It would be an embarrassment. That would be especially great.
The fun thing is I did some of this research, listeners. You probably guessed when I did the ad for our Patreon. I wanted to use as much 1920s slang because actually I feel like, and this is something that happens often with nostalgic media, is that, and I think in some ways Fantastic Beasts is a little bit of a victim of this, is nostalgic media, especially if it is true nostalgia, it tends to not include the parts about history that are necessarily accurate or reflect the time period in order to make the characters more relatable. Because if we heard a lot of the characters in Fantastic Beasts talking like this, we wouldn't be able to understand them. But this probably is how they would have talked. The same thing happens in, say, Stranger Things, which we all have a lot of nostalgia for because we're like, oh, the 80s. I wasn't there, but I like that. Or I was there and I liked that, but the characters of Stranger Things are not necessarily, the kids are not necessarily an accurate depiction of kids in the 1980s. One big thing they tend to be missing is, you know, the rampant misogyny because that was a thing. But you know, it's the part of the 1980s you don't want to talk about and it doesn't make it fun anymore. So erase that. By that same coin, you know, what's funny about this is Pottermore even got in on this bit where they did an article about 1920s slang And I'm pretty sure literally none of it makes it into the movie.
Yeah.
But it's fun, I guess. The only thing that's even made it... Here's a fun one that's also related to Pottermore. Glad rags is a term from the 1920s. Getting on your glad rags in the 1920s meant pulling your best frock or suit on and heading out on the town. So if you recall glad rags wizard wear from the books, that's where that comes from.
Giggle water, according to Pottermore, is champagne?
Yep, giggle water. So yeah, they use the term giggle water. That's the one. So just like Megan, I lied. Giggle water is the one term they use. And they don't use it. They use it more as a pun because in the
wizarding
world.
They did shots of champagne?
Mm-hmm.
Ambitious.
Jacob really cannot hold his liquor at all.
Well, I think it's implied in the wizarding world that they have taken the term giggle water literally.
Yeah.
And that it's supposed to be an alcoholic drink that makes you giggle. So.
Which champagne can do.
Maybe not a shot of it.
No, probably need more than a shot.
Also, don't Only take shots of champagne. Though. That's a weird way to take yes. your alcohol.
Drink responsibly, everybody.
You can take a shot of hooch, though, which is bootleg liquor.
Or moonshine. Or noodle juice.
You could noodle take a shot juice. You could take a shot of a noodle juice right in the kissa, which is your mouth.
Or panther piss, which is whiskey.
That is not a bad term for whiskey, I will not lie.
Oh, well, and here's one that survived till today and also has relevance to Harry Potter. An owl is a person who's out late.
Oh.
That. On a toot, on a, that's a drinking binge. that's a keeper. Put that one in your
so,
pocket.
A rummy is a drunken bum. So you would say a rummy on a toot. That's fun. I wish we still talked like this. A simoleon is a dollar, which is also the same if you're playing The Sims.
Ha. Maybe that's where they're from. Maybe. Now you're on the trolley. Which means now you've got it. Or you're right.
The struggle buggy is the backseat of a car.
You slay me is actually a slang term from the 20s?
That's crazy.
I just thought, so I was really pissed at that line when I first saw the film. Because I was like, did they really just throw in the term slay into this movie? Because I think it was like slightly relevant, or at least people were using it when... the film came out. I don't know. I just knew I knew the term slay. And I was like, did they really? Like, that doesn't fit the time at all. Like, I hate this, but it's actually slang for you're hilarious. Well, and now internally, yeah. I take back everything I've ever thought.
Well, slay is a victim, interestingly, of kind of the evolution of slang and language, because slay today means like when you say like, oh, slay, you slay, girl. Because you have to say it like
yeah.
that.
Uh-huh.
means that you're killing it. Yeah, yeah. But back then, didn't mean the same thing. If you slayed, you were just funny. So you could still be like, oh, you slay, girl. But it would be like 20s. So she'd be like, that girl is quite good at comedy. And then somebody would be like, get her off the stage because she's a woman and this is the 20s and we hate women. So, silly 20s.
Oh, 20s.
Ooh, know one's onions, to know one's business or what one is talking about.
Mind your potatoes. Just mind your own business.
I love that.
I know. I'm going to start using it. We're bringing it back.
We're going to use all of these. That's yes. Even now.
So I'd love to see. I mean, there's some fun ones in here, listeners. If you just look up 1920s slang, the reason it was a little harder for me to do the research was really because you find more lists of just here's some slang. Weren't the 20s fun rather than an explanation of why the slang happened the way it did. But yeah, just Google 1920s slang. You'll get a ton of hilarious lists. That'll also probably surprise you with stuff that actually stayed around till today. And it does give you a real insight into how language evolves. And I would just personally hope, I'm guessing it won't occur because I think that's just out the window now with such creative uses of languages. No Madge and non-Magie. but I would just love to see more of this kind of language that's rooted in the time in Fantastic Beasts. But unfortunately, I think to make the characters more relatable to us, that's probably not going to happen. But let's listen in, listen closely in movie 2 and see what you hear.
Yeah. I mean, they did throw in a couple little, like, you slay me type phrases that are still kind of easily translatable to today's youths. So yeah, we'll see.
Probably, yeah. And again, it's like stuff that you would recognize the meaning of. Because really, I do think if we were hearing the characters talk in the way that they would have talked, we would have a hard time understanding them. Fun way to experiment with that, listeners, if you own a gaming system. Try playing L.A. Noire, which was by Rockstar Games, same people who do Grand Theft Auto. But it takes place in the 1940s. And you're a private investigator. You're an investigator in the 1940s solving crimes in LA. And there is a lot of slang used in that game. And it's very much a product of its time period. But it is interesting to hear characters talk the way they used to. It's also kind of funny to hear the voice actors saying these dated phrases because I feel like they don't want to say them because they're horrible and misogynist and racist. So give that a try if you're looking for more slang and you want to immerse yourself in it. It's worth it to give it a shot. But yeah, we'll see what comes of the next movies. But yes, I think we've time-turned back to the present day, so everybody get out of your 1920s outfits and wash off all of that misogyny and racism.
Give it a good scrub.
So now that we're back in the present, I believe we found ourselves in Kowalski's corner.
Yay!
Have we backed ourselves into a Kowalski corner?
It is very comfy here, so.
Oh, and there's so many delicious pastries.
Well, we are Hufflepuffs, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yes, we have the good stuff.
For anyone who doesn't know, it's where our lovely guests are allowed to discuss absolutely anything they want. So it's like, you know, you guys are listeners. You get to come on and make us talk about whatever you think we should talk about, which is pretty fun.
And I'm so excited because Melanie has chosen the perfect question. Oh my God.
Well, I would like to know if you could write yourself into the storyline as a brand new character, who and or what would you be?
Melanie, who or what would you be?
I think the first thing that came to mind was that I would be an assistant to Jacob in his bakery. And aww. I would help him out everywhere. And as soon as Newt comes around to take him on the next adventure, I would take over his shop until he comes back and take care of everything. And be surrounded all the time by pretty delicious little pastries, and I would be just in heaven.
Oh my God, that's so cute. You gave yourself a secondary role.
I mean, these are the characters that never get talked about, though.
No, she wrote her... She basically is like the non-magical equivalent of Abernathy.
Well, I don't really mind that because I don't like to have the spotlight on me anyway, so I think that fits me quite well, and I would be really happy there.
I bet you'd steal the show in your 10 minutes of screen time because I'm all about Abernathy, so I love your role, Melanie. I bet there'd be a lot of quips from you.
I would give my bakery best
quips.
But what about you guys?
I need to think about this for, like, 30 seconds.
I need to go last.
It's because hers is the best and she's saving it for last.
No, you know, I'm curious.
That's the Lizzie's method.
No, it's because there's nothing right now.
So I had something that I'm fairly sure I've briefly mentioned on the show before, but I actually came up with this whole thing. I'm pretty sure in our SmuggleNet staff chat when Fantastic Beasts was being cast, and everybody was like, who should play Newt? And then there was this discussion where everybody was like, somebody should, a person of color should play Newt. And I was like, me, it should be me. But then I came up with a whole thing where I was like, no, just kidding. Actually, and I basically, I don't know why I came up with this. I think I forgot that I was talking about Harry Potter and in my head had blended Harry Potter and the Golden Compass together, because I was like, without question, I just launched into this whole thing where I said, I'm going to be Newt's best friend and he's a talking polar bear. And I had this whole thing down. He had a name and I can't remember it because I could not for the life of me find this conversation. It's probably been buried by the sands of time.
Maybe it was Charlie because you have a mustache.
It definitely wasn't Charlie.
Okay.
When you have a brother named Charlie, you tend not to name things after your brother all the time. It was probably something weird, you know. I'm trying to think. I was thinking of weird names this morning. I forgot them. They were some good ones. But, yeah, you know, something like, what's the name of Thor's hammer?
Mjolnir.
Yeah, that's my polar bear name, Mjolnir.
I love this. This is good.
And he's Newt's best friend and he talks. And there's not a reason he talks. There's just, you know, the famous magical talking polar bears of the Arctic. And yeah. Or maybe he's actually a wizard who got turned into a polar bear after from a bad Animagus spell. He didn't fully figure out how to be an Animagus. He couldn't turn himself back. And now he's a polar bear. Yep, wow. That's my plot. I didn't say he'd be useful. I'd just say he'd be there. Or rather,
that
he'd be there.
Oh.
You're welcome, listeners. Please don't at me on Twitter.
Please at him on Twitter with fan art of polar bears nonstop. Thank you.
Mjolnir the polar bear.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I was kind of thinking I would be, like, depending on whether Leta Lestrange turns out to be a good egg or a bad egg. If she's a good egg, I could see myself being like her best friend that's like, girl, you could do better. Like, let's go get some wine and just talk it out. Like, you know, it's, you don't need this in your life.
Megyn Kelly.
And then later, yeah. Later when she moves on to the clearly inferior brother, I'm going to be like, girl, what are you doing? Like, come on now. And then we'll drink more wine and talk it out. So basically, I'm like the side therapist.
What would your wizard name be, Megan? Tallulah.
There we go. That works for me. I also feel like because Megan is derived from Margaret, you could just call me Marge, the wine friend.
You're not blowing up, though, right?
No, I'm not. Okay. I hope not.
Good.
I do have a bunch of dogs, though, in this alternate universe.
I feel really bad. I kind of feel bad that your name is Marge, because that just feels like how Barbie's best friend is named Madge.
Margie? Is that any better?
A little. I feel like Maggie would be better if your name is Margaret. Okay. If your full name is Margaret. Yeah, Maggie. Like, oh, Maggie, let's go get some wine at the speakeasy.
Yes, that's me.
Yeah, you're Maggie.
Okay.
But then we have to give you a weird last name. Uh-oh, Maggie Potter. Twist.
Ooh, I accept. I seriously think, like, I think that I was legitimately in love with the fictional character of Harry Potter growing up.
I'm still in love with the fictional character.
Like, I have, like, a weird physical, like, attachment to him, and mm-hmm. he's not real.
No, that's okay.
Anyway,
he can be as real as he wants.
He's real for us.
There you go. I think your wizard last name should be Folly, so you can be one of the wizard names on the Sacred 28 that hasn't been used yet. You're Maggie Foley.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Sounds good.
And I'm a pureblood, but I'm not a jerk pureblood.
No, you're a very nice pureblood who drinks wine with her stupid friend Lita, who can't choose the right guy.
Exactly. That's my
bio.
Okay,
Lizzie, we've given you all this time to think with our fantastic plot lines.
So I was going to go with Megan's plot line.
Really?
Yeah, that's why I was like, Megan.
Maybe you could do it kind of like the three Bimbettes and Beauty and the Beast, and you guys could be like a trio of girls.
Yeah, she could have more than one wine friend, and when she's off doing dumb stuff, you and I are just sitting at the bar like, God,
we're like,
when
the,
will she stop?
We're the two friends from Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. I don't know why I was thinking about Mamma Mia.
No, it's fine. It all ties in because Julie Walters was in that movie.
There you go. Yeah. I'm just thinking about how she said her soulmate was carbs in the last trailer. And we're like, oh, that's so true. I feel that so much. But an actual plot line that I would give myself is I would want to be like a beast babysitter. Like when Newt's off on his adventure, like he can't leave those beasts alone unattended for too long. Like they're going to get hungry. They need to be fed. They need to be checked on. So he can like,
so you just magical live in the case?
LinkedIn hit me up and be like, I need someone who has some expertise and I'll go down and hang in the case with the moon calves while he's off defeating Grindelwald.
Aww.
That's a really good one.
That sounds lovely. Mm-hmm. Why didn't I think of that?
You'll take care of me, the polar bear.
Mjolnir, the polar bear.
And speaking of Michael, I tried to find your conversation about the polar bear. I checked two groups, and all I could find was after the first teaser trailer came out, Claire had actually started a chat, and all you wrote was, "Where is my witty talking polar bear?"
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's witty.
Some additional depth there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, see, I was never better than a Marvel movie. Immediately, I was just like, quips! My polar bear is going to be the one to make the quips. So basically, I'm Jacob if he was a polar bear. That's the role I want to play. See, I think the only other role I would have written in, because this is what you do when you're a fan, right? Is I wanted to be like Newt's bestie from school, like his guy bestie, because he had Lita as his girl bestie, and who was his guy bestie? Oh, I don't know, Michael Harley. Yeah, because these films need some more color.
That is true.
Just like the Hogwarts Mystery Game. Your best friend is a person of color. I can be that friend.
Yeah, but I think you should be like more than just the friend, though. You should have like your own arc, you know?
And what better to have an arc than a witty talking polar bear? By the way, I want his surname to be Mjolnir. His first name is Constantine because that is the name of the guy who found polar bears.
Okay.
In 1774, he was like, look at that polar bear. I'm going to call it an Ursus Maritimus, which is Latin for maritime bear. So I am Constantine Mjolnir, the polar bear.
I like it.
Who is taken care of by Lizzie, the beast babysitter. Lizzie, what's your witch name?
You know what? I really... So my pledge name in my sorority is Daphne, but it's spelled D-A-F-N-E-E. And I really like that. I really enjoy that name. So I think I would take my my alter ego and use Daphne.
And what's your
that's a good
weird
witch name?
Yeah. What's your that's a good witch first name. But what's your wizarding surname? As one of the people of color on the show, I'm going to maybe say Shafiq. We might want to save.
Taking care of both names, so.
I mean, sure, why not? I'm down. I like
you. You wanna jump into one of these established families that you wanna be a twist? You want to be like a Macmillan or a Longbottom or something like that?
I like Twist. Daphne Twist.
Oh!
That's cool.
She actually took the word twist and she turned it into her name.
What a twist.
Wow, yeah. No, M. Night Shyamalan. No, you fit in very well.
Michael, your polar bear's name is Nyx Tragen.
I gave him a name already. Thank you for finding it.
He dies like in that. The last movie.
Oh, I don't like that as much as Constantine Mjolnir.
Oh my god, Megan, you already drew him.
That's my best work ever.
Constantine Mjolnir, his original name was Nyx Tragen.
Yep.
You wrote that polar bear definitely like carries a rifle. you're welcome, listeners.
Yeah.
That's from 2 years ago.
Yep. You vote on it, listeners. Do you want Nyx Tragen or Constantine Mjolnir as your polar bear?
That's the podcast question this week.
I will also do the motion capture for this polar bear now that that's a thing. Happy to do it. Good. This is a good movie, guys. I think we should just take ourselves out of the Fantastic Beasts canon and just make our own wizarding fan fiction about these characters.
Let's do it.
We'll call it Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Sorry.
Oh, I never tire of Cursed Child jokes.
Sorry.
Especially when I'm not expecting them.
That was a good question, Melanie. I'm really hopeful that the listeners and our fellow hosts who were not on this episode will also have some input.
Yeah, it's really fun. I'm very attached to Daphne Twist now.
Yeah, I think we're all very attached to our character. These are good characters.
If you guys have good stories to share, send them to us.
Yes, please.
We would love to read them.
Yeah, we're in theory time right now, guys. There ain't no news until this episode is finished recording.
So in like 20 minutes or less.
Yep, get ready.
So for this week's podcast question, there's a duo of questions. One, which polar bear name do you think is better?
Constantine Mjolnir or Nyx Tragen?
I'm literally going to go put a poll up and we'll settle this.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And two, what characters do you think will die by the end of the Fantastic Beasts film series and why? We want to hear your theories, so please send them to us. And if you have anything else you want to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. So drop us an L on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. We also really love it when you leave us reviews on iTunes because that's fun. And in case you missed it, we are also now on Spotify. So you can listen to us on 17 devices at once, which is the best experience.
Surround sound.
Yes.
So, Constantine Mjolnir says, find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. Oh, he's also a steady practitioner of Shakespearean theater.
So it's very gruff British polar bear.
Yes, you may find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. You know, I might have to give this role up to Patrick Stewart because that's what it sounds like. Facebook. At facebook.com/speakbeastie. Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. Support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. Oh, yeah.
That was magnificent.
Was it?
There's really no other word for it.
Oh. This has been Constantine Mjolnir. Thank you for listening to this episode of Speak Beastie. I'm Michael.
I'm Lizzie.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Melanie. Case closed.